This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is headed to Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium for tomorrow's JPI. It would be the Jim Phillips Invitational. I'm wondering if it should be the JPPHDI, right?
Dr. Jim.
Yeah, that's right. Could very well be. But nevertheless, you've got Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium fever tomorrow with Northwestern coming to town. Pat Fitzgerald, David Cutcliffe, two great coaches. Should be hopefully a very entertaining game.
Yeah, we had a great visit, our crew did, yesterday with Pat Fitzgerald, who not only had unbelievable things to say about his relationship with David Cutcliffe, but also talked at length about what Jim Phillips has meant to him in his coaching career. So some of that tomorrow with Roddy Jones, LaRisha Harris, as our coverage begins at 4 o'clock following Syracuse and Albany and ahead of Carolina and Virginia. Speaking of the state of North Carolina, doesn't happen but maybe once or twice a year that all four North Carolina schools play home games. And in particular here in the Triangle area, you have Duke, State, and Carolina all at home tomorrow. Mark, you know, doesn't happen much, maybe twice a year. That's where we go call on someone like Luke DeCock for his insight and observation. Of course, covers the ACC for the News and Observer. Luke, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm great. Glad to be with you.
So all four are at home. Wake, Carolina, Duke, and State. Let's put them in priority. Everybody's leaning toward Chapel Hill, I guess, because of the coastal implications. However, Wake and Florida State is one that I think is starting to surface as a pretty critical game in terms of the way ACC football may shake out on the other side behind Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Florida State, it's really a season saver at this point, given the way the first 2 weeks have gone. And, you know, they've got... The Seminoles have to start getting some traction at some point. And, you know, do we really know how Wake good is? Yes, they're clearly the best team in the Tidewater after beating Old Dominion and Norfolk State. But, you know, this will be the Deacons' first real test against, a team with ACC talent. And, you know, that's always a hurdle for teams to play that first big game. But, it being at home, is Florida State sort of wounded and ready to lash out, or beaten down and not ready for the challenge? I mean, I think we'll find out. You know, it's a shame. Mackenzie Milton, clearly one of the best stories in college football so far, but it's kind of been overshadowed by the way the Seminoles have lost those two games.
Luke, for folks that have covered this league for a long, long time, it's almost surreal to have this conversation, isn't it, regarding Florida State and, you know, the crossroad game, kind of a do or die, and here's Wake Forest, 2-0, and, maybe we should kind of move forward because the Noles have struggled so much lately, but it's still hard to fathom when you remember when they joined the league. I mean, we celebrated their 31-year anniversary this week when Florida State decided, hey, guess what, we're coming to the Atlantic Coast Conference and all the things that had to happen behind the scenes for that to happen, and when they got here, they just ran roughshod through the whole league for the entire decade of the 90s. Now, here we are in 2021, and Florida State, who just 8 years ago was on top of the college football world, winning the national championship in the last BCS year when they knocked off Auburn at the Rose Bowl. Here we are having this conversation again regarding the Noles, and, hey, it's week three, and it's not necessarily a must-win, but, man, it's awfully close.
Yeah, I think it was something we talked about a lot this summer when we found out Bobby Bowden was sick, and then obviously when he passed away, that the shadow that Florida State and Bowden in particular, let's not look over that, cast over the ACC when they arrived and for many years afterwards. The news about Bowden's illness broke when we were down in Charlotte at ACC kickoff, and that was an event that was, Bobby Bowden was in the big tent and everybody else, everyone wanted to know what he thought. The all of college football hung on his words, and in part because you knew Florida State was going to be one of the best two or three teams in the country. And there was a pretty good chance the rest of the ACC wasn't going to catch up. And even, last year when North Carolina went to Florida State, was trying to chase that win over Florida State that he never got the first time around. And, back then it was Florida State. Everybody was chasing Florida State. Now it's Clemson. Everybody's chasing Clemson. But it is a little crazy to think about. And, certainly at that time, Wake Forest was not a program that you would have put in the same category as Florida State. But, Jim Grobe and Dave Clawson over the years have have, you know, built that into something that is able to compete on that level and you know, play in an ACC championship game at one point. And now, you know, what you get from Dave Clawson every year is a team that's going to be at the absolute maximum of its potential and recruiting players who fit that system and fit that program. And that's kind of what isn't there at Florida State right now. And what Mike Norvell is trying to fit is, you know, get players who fit the way that Florida State wants and needs to play, and then get that assemblage of talent to play at the limit of its potential. And clearly that for a couple of coaches now, that's been a difficult task. And it's for those of us and people before me, to be honest, the way that Florida State absolutely loomed over the ACC in football, that's a huge change. That's not something you could pick someone up in 1991 and tell them now and they would be able to comprehend. But it's also, you know, a microcosm of sort of when we look at the big picture issues facing the ACC and the alliance and television deals and expansion and conference realignment. You know, the ACC needs more than Clemson. You know that. I know that. But Florida State traditionally has been the other program that carries the water in football. And the ACC, you know, for the good of the league, it needs that back.
Hey, Luke, as much as Florida State Wake Forest is grabbing headlines in the Atlantic, there's no doubt that Carolina, Virginia is doing it in the Coastal. And I want to go back to something you mentioned a moment ago. Mack Brown chasing the win against Florida State, not getting it last year. The romance of the offseason, the favorites in the Coastal, lose in Blacksburg, come back, play better last week against Georgia State out of the Sun Belt. Now all of a sudden it feels like the chips are really going to get pushed into the middle of the table tomorrow night at 7:30 at Keenan when Virginia comes in. I mean, there's a lot of pregame amble about physicality and toughness and all these things, and it feels like Carolina has to match it Saturday night.
Unquestionably, and I think, you know, if this weren't against an undefeated Coastal Division team, maybe it's a little different, but this is really where the rubber is going to meet the road for UNC because, you know, if you look at the Virginia Tech game, obviously there were offensive line issues. It didn't look like North Carolina was ready in the first half, that there was a certain sense of, you know, we can show up and win this game. Not ready for the atmosphere, not ready for the environment, not ready for the, you know, the way Virginia Tech was going to play. And that their season is, you know, the season didn't fall apart in that game. It certainly became more difficult to do the things that North Carolina wanted to do. I think it became very difficult for Sam Howell to win some of the individual awards that people had been talking about. But you lose this game and you fall to 0-2 and 0-2 in the Coastal, you know, then some of the things that were on the table are off the table and you aren't the team that you said you were and you believed you were and other people said you were. So yeah, I mean, I think this, for what this team talked about potentially being able to achieve, for what other people said it could potentially achieve, that to me, this is a must win all in. North Carolina season was not hanging in the balance against Virginia Tech. North Carolina season is hanging in the balance against Virginia.
Luke, how about the fact we're 2 weeks into the season and right now the top quarterback in the league is Brennan Armstrong? What kind of odds would you have had that in the middle of the summer in Charlotte during media days?
Well, I think you saw from him last year that, you know, there were some weapons to his game. And guys, you know, do take steps forward and they do develop. You know, obviously there were other quarterbacks in the league, well, you know, for who got more attention. But we talked about, let's give ourselves a little credit here. We all talked about how this was the year of the quarterback, and it was pretty much everybody but Duke felt really good about their quarterback situation, and for good reason. And it could have been Devin Leary we're talking about right now. You know, it could even have been Tommy DeVito we're talking about right now potentially. But it's Brennan Armstrong because he's done so much and he's been such a threat in so many ways. Am I a little surprised it's Armstrong? Maybe. Am I surprised that one of sort of the ACC quarterbacks, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but sort of the second tier below the guys who were getting all the attention, am I surprised that one of those guys has kind of stepped up and moved into that top tier? No, I'm not, just because there was so much returning talent at the position, so many teams, you know, building out their offenses because they felt like they had a quarterback that they could count on and who could make plays. But Brennan Armstrong's been terrific, and he was at times last year. So, you know, we probably shouldn't be surprised. But you know, I think it's okay. I mean, there were a lot of guys in that position, and he seems to be the one who's run with it the most.
I think you and I have had this conversation before, Luke. It's interesting to see the long games being rewarded here a little bit. Bronco Mendenhall has played the long game at Charlottesville in terms of building back their football. Certainly Dave Doran's done it at NC State. We talk about Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. The long game for Mack Brown, there was a lot of expectation for year three. I'm not saying if Carolina doesn't win tomorrow night that doesn't diminish the work that's being done in recruiting in other areas. It just stems the level of momentum for year three, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because they went into the season saying, this is the year we take a step forward. We're going to learn from last year. But, you know, to be fair to North Carolina, and obviously the offensive line has taken a lot of heat, and rightfully so, because Sam Howell was running for his life in Blacksburg. But, mm-hmm. you know, we all kind of glossed over during the offseason the idea that, you know, Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, Nyami Brown, all these guys who are in the NFL now, you know, they lost almost 5,000 yards of production from their playmakers. And everybody kind of just said, and me too, kind of right up until the end, we're like, well, you know, Mack will figure it out. We know he's recruiting well. There's talent there. They've got the Ty Chandler, the Tennessee transfer. They'll figure it out. It'll be fine. But it turns out that's really hard to do. And it's really hard, especially against Virginia Tech, to drop in receivers who don't have a ton of experience and may be talented, but can't get separation off the line. And that takes away a lot of the quick passing stuff that North Carolina relies on. And then, you know, that obviously sort of infects the rest of your game. So, you know, I think win or lose, there's a little bit of reassessment with the Tar Heels in the sense of maybe they had a little more work to do in the offseason than we were all thinking or giving them credit for, just because we sort of assumed that the upward momentum of the program, as you said, would sort of carry them through. And that's another reason why this is a really important game. Maybe in week one you have some growing pains with the new players and Sam Howell's relationships with them on the field. But by week three, especially with that Georgia State game in there, by week three you should not. Mm. So we will expect to see this week a more effective running game, certainly better pass protection, and more effective you know, sort of route running from the receivers to get open and make the offense work. You know, I think the other thing is, you know, especially with the offensive line, I don't think any of us until now gave Javonte Williams and Michael Carter enough credit for taking sort of poorly blocked plays and turning them into positive plays because they were so good. Williams with the ability to shed tackles and Carter with the ability to dodge them and outrun people. I think we're seeing now just how many sort of bad to mediocre plays those guys turned into good plays. And the Tar Heels right now anyway don't have players who can do that.
Luke, speaking of talented backs, Mateo Durant has got to be excited about what awaits in the Jim Phillips Invitational tomorrow at Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium.
Jim Phillips, PhD, as you noted earlier, yes. My question after the after Duke's game against A&T was, you know, how many touchdowns a game is Mateo Durant going to have to score to get into the ACC Player of the Year conversation? Because is there a more productive player in the league so far? I'm not sure there is. No. And, you know, if you're scoring three touchdowns a game, you know, that feels like a number at the end of the year when you've broken records set by, you know, some pretty famous guys, if we get to that point. You know, could a player on a team that probably, certainly at this point, doesn't look like it's going to be, you know, 8-4, you know, obviously there's a lot of football to be played, but losing to Charlotte in the opener is not a great sign. You know, can a player like Mateo Durant sort of pull an Eric Green and be so exponentially better individually that he's a Player of the Year candidate, you know, despite his team's maybe lack of relative success? I'm fascinated to find out. I mean, he's a terrific player, obviously, who can run the ball and catch the ball. And you know, for all of Duke's problems so far, they have done a really, really good job of finding ways to get Mateo Durant the ball and let him make plays.
Hey, Luke, let me tell you, the Virginia Tech folks just perked up when they heard Eric Green. That's a great analogy of a guy who was a tremendous scorer, led the nation in scoring in basketball for the Hokies on a team that was so-so. And I think you're right about Mateo Durant. I don't know. It's a really good question, though, if there's a specific number. I mean, okay, if he runs for 2,000 yards, that's easy to say, right? But beyond that, does he have to put together a combination of things? And here's the other aspect about Duke. Maybe the most curious part about this 1-1 start for the Blue Devils, has been the struggle of an experienced secondary, a group that you had a lot of faith in based on just their level of play in the last couple of 3 years. And now all of a sudden, the problems in the back end are maybe the most troubling. It's not up front where you lost Demukeji and Rumpf and you thought you might have issues.
Yeah, it's been a little curious. And I think one of the things we've seen with you know, and Duke had a hard time stopping a running quarterback at the beginning against A&T when A&T was able to put some really long drives together, you know, with their backup who was playing. So, you know, it's been an interesting year for Duke. I think everybody was sort of expecting, because of the turnovers, because of COVID and the lack of training camp, that last year was just absolutely this massive aberration, and that there would be more of a sense of Duke sort of getting back on track this year and being more of what we've known Duke football to be under David Cutcliffe, and obviously didn't start out that way in week one. But the secondary is sort of another area where, you know, it just hasn't been kind of what you expected it to be. I think we'll know more about Duke after this week, because Northwestern, you know, obviously this is a power conference team. They have a very specific way of playing. They know what they're going to do, and they're just going to say, we're going to do it better than you. And, you know, obviously impeccably coached. I think this will be a really good litmus test game for Duke to say, you know, we're able to fix the problems that we've had, whether they're in the secondary or the passing game, and we're able to address those and improve and move on from week to week. It's probably a good time for that for Duke. I think that's what, you know, everyone was looking at the defensive line because of the talent they lost there. But, you know, as you guys know, sometimes sometimes problems on the defensive line can lead to problems on the secondary. And they're going to have to get pressure against Northwestern.
All right, real quick, the idea that things went bad in Starkville last week and then the Peyton Wilson injury is confirmed. I know it's Furman and I know it's a game NC State should win. But where are you on the Wolfpack after what was an incredibly disappointing night, I know, for them at Mississippi State?
Yeah, and just sort of the most disappointing part of it, I think, for anyone who was watching and thought that NC State had a chance to win that game was just sort of the what appeared to be, whether it was or not, sort of a lack of intensity, a lack of, the ability to, I don't want to say competitiveness, I don't think that was the issue, but, you know, just looked sort of overwhelmed by the opponent, the atmosphere, which this shouldn't happen to a team as experienced as NC State. And, you know, poor Peyton Wilson, I mean, just an absolute battering ram of a player who's just, you know, you see it with some guys. They have to play a certain way, and that way takes a certain toll on their body. And for Peyton Wilson, it's his shoulders. It's just, you know, unfortunately, haven't been able to hold up to the way that he plays that makes him effective. So, no, I'm not worried about NC State against Furman. It probably comes as a good time, you know, kind of spread some stuff out on the roster, regroup, rediscover your fire. You know, for whatever reason, whether they gave Mississippi State too much credit or the atmosphere, despite their preparation, caught them off guard, it just didn't look like a team with a lot of confidence, a lot of drive. They've got to get that back against Furman. And we know that State can do it because, you know, the way they played against South Florida, they had an inferior opponent, gave them no oxygen, put their foot on them right from the start, did what good teams do. And so they've got a chance to do that against Furman. But, you know, we can talk about this at some other point. But let's face it, State season is going to come down to 2 weeks from now when they host Clemson. And that, you know, sort of period, end of story.
Pac, wouldn't you agree?
Well, it's the first conference game. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, you got to get off to a good start. Dabo just talked about it. But, you know, that's been a mental hurdle and a physical hurdle for NC State. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, Mississippi State's a nice team. I just thought NC State had better talent than Mississippi State. And they laid in, I mean, I'm going to call it like I saw it. They laid an egg when given the golden opportunity. So, you know, they'll beat up on Furman just like they beat up on South Florida. But, you know, Clemson's a different beast. And, you know, the Tigers have work to be done, too. So, you know, that game, we'll worry about that game in week four. Week three, you got to go take care of business.
Hey, Luke, always thanks for the time. Have a great weekend. Appreciate it, my man.
Yeah, enjoyed it. We'll talk to you guys later.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wes, you all right?
I'm good. How are you?
No, I'm fine. Just checking on you. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, things are good. Fighting it out now. Getting it done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everything's all right in Durham. You're in one piece, right?
Yeah, okay. Basically.
Okay, good. Just checking. Just checking.
Hey, you know what I did? Hey, I got a prize for you on Tuesday. Got a prize for you Tuesday. Took care of you last night.
Is it edible?
Yep.
Good. That's all I need to know. If it's edible, I'm in. Because I'm starving.
Dave Clawson not going to be happy.
Why is that?
Didn't go well for Dave Clawson last night.
What happened?
No egg custards being made right now.
You know, maybe Dave needs to prove one more week that he can beat Florida State. Then, you know, that's kind of the incentive. It's the incentive for the Deeks.
For Miss Jean? For Miss Jean to get Dave an egg custard is to beat Florida State.
You got to start 1-0 in the league before you get egg custard for Miss Jean.
We don't have time for this story right now. But you need to ask me at some point later in the year about my grandmother, my mother's mom, who used to pull against everybody for Wake Forest. She was dyed-in-the-wool Demon Deacon fan. So we'll have to get to that at some point. That's all right.
Fair enough.
On to other games in Week 3. Let's start at Heinz Field. How does Pittsburgh handle the Broncos of Western Michigan, who come calling tomorrow after the win at Knoxville? How does that happen tomorrow night? What do you think transpires after Kenny Pickett and Pat Narduzzi's defense bruised up the balls last Saturday at Shields Watkins Field in Neyland Stadium, Pac?
I can answer that in one word. Easily. That's how they'll handle it. Easily.
Yeah.
I'm buying it. Listen, that was a great win. Pitt did what NC State could not do. And that is,
right,
they had the date. They circled it. They were going on the road. Hostile environment. SEC team. Pitt spotted Vols 10. Said, cool, now let's go play football and waxed them. NC State, opening kickoff. You're down 7, never to be seen again. Totally two different, fake left, go right. I mean, totally different deal. So I think Pitt's playing with a ton of confidence. Kenny Pickett's been out of sight. We've talked about the wide receivers. We've talked about the tight end. The defense is getting after people. We talked about the 5 sacks. Narduzzi, since he's been there, they get him come up with 5 sacks. They're 17-1. I don't think there'll be a hangover here whatsoever. I think Pitt's on a roll. Life is good. Yep. And if you're a Pitt fan, you're looking down that schedule going, guess what? We have put ourselves in position to be a factor in the league. And I think they are.
Yeah. Well, let's hope the same script plays out at the Carrier Dome tomorrow, 12 noon, game one of our triple header. Syracuse and Albany meet for the first time. Orange will be looking to get the offense on track behind Tommy DeVito. The last 4 FCS teams that Syracuse has faced have combined to score just 27 points against Dino Babers' team. Tommy DeVito, the starter, and Sean Tucker needs to get his glide set back up again after a strong effort in week one against Ohio. Then we go to a game that I think is interesting for one of the subplots, and that is Boston College's visit to Temple, Pac, because Dennis Grossell is now the quarterback of the Eagles after the injury to Phil Jurkovec that could shelve him for the rest of the year. But it's not an unknown factor. Grossell is a guy that has started some ball games and produced for BC in the last couple of years.
Wes, did you see the Temple-Rutgers game? I'm just asking. Did you see any of that game? Because if you did, you wouldn't be asking me by what BC is going to do. BC is going to take care of business tomorrow. I like their chances in the Pat Kraft Classic. And, you know, getting back to Syracuse real quick, I want to see Tommy DeVito throw the football downfield and complete passes. I want to see him get some confidence for Syracuse. They got to get that against Albany. And I think BC, despite the terrible news this week with Jurkovec, they'll be good to go against Temple. I just think those 3 games to me, if those aren't WWWs for the ACC, we got real issues. I mean, all 3 of those should be easy wins.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Make no mistake now, there's going to be quite a quarterback showdown in Chapel Hill this weekend. It's going to have to be a fight because you know North Carolina's going to have an edge, especially with what's coming out of the Virginia locker room this week.
It's our culture versus theirs. I'll show you why. up the whole daggone time.
Touchdown, Tar Heels, and it's Sam Howell. Armstrong, Cavaliers, touchdown.
So we felt like we should have won that game, so we plan to get redemption back.
Go time in Chapel Hill. I'm telling you, that's going to be intense. That's going to be great. Going to be good.
Absolutely right. 7:30 tomorrow night, they'll kick it at Keenan Stadium. Dave O'Brien, Tim Hasselbeck, and ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Football Friday edition of Packer and Durham, Kelsey Riggs. Good morning, Kelsey.
Good morning, you guys. Listen, if you didn't want to see my face on TV this early, you could have just told me that you didn't want to see what my airport face looks like.
Kelsey, I say this all the time. When you got it, flaunt it. You know, it doesn't matter. You know what? Airport face, baseball hat, under the lights, sidelines. No, you got it going on, girl. You ain't got to worry about all that stuff. You don't have the Packer and Durham disease. It's all good. It's all good.
I was ready to show off my famous friend here, Jordan Cornett, the one and only in the airport with me. But you know what? Next time, we'll get enough of him tomorrow all day long on the huddle.
Whoa. Wait a second. Wait. I thought your famous friend had a tea time this morning. I was told your famous friend has a tea time.
He does. He's sweating it out, hoping that we land on time and those golf clubs arrive. It must be nice to just show up and play golf. I'm like showing up and going straight to the stadium to do interviews. So I got to get on that Jordan Cornett kind of payroll, I guess.
Shouldn't we all? All right, but seriously, as far as the game goes, you know, I like the fact that there's something at stake. I like the fact that the team that needs to win on the road has had the advantage. I like the fact that the team that's favored feels like they got something to play for. I like the fact that the loser of this game walks to the locker room really hating life. This game's got a little bit of everything, and there's a ton at stake, isn't there, Kelsey, regardless of who wins this game?
There really is. I mean, anytime you got a big matchup like this, a coastal matchup, it's a big deal. And then these two teams have been playing a long time. It's going to be the 126th meeting between them. They call it the oldest rivalry, but I think, like, when they think rivalry, these teams, obviously North Carolina thinks more like NC State and Virginia thinks Virginia Tech, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot on the line in this one. And, you know, with Virginia also winning, like having North Carolina's number lately, winning the last four, it's something that, you know, when I talk to some of the North Carolina players this week, they're like, we haven't beat them, and we know that, and we want to do it. And then you talk to Virginia, and the big point of emphasis all offseason for Bronco has been, we've got to win games on the road. And what better way to do that than to go into Chapel Hill, and it would be their first road win against a ranked team since 2011. So I think that would be setting the standard for what they want to do at Virginia with road games this year, if they're able to do that. And, you know, just the talent too. I'm so excited to see Sam Howell and Brennan Armstrong. I got to talk to Sam yesterday and just kind of pick his brain about that Virginia Tech game and what he took away from it. And, you know, the main thing that he said, that all the guys said in the locker room afterwards was, you know, this was one game. And is it going to be the game that defines our season, or is it going to be the game that changes our season? And how are we going to handle it going forward? So, you know, they certainly looked good last week. So did Virginia. And so we're going to have a good one at Keenan tomorrow night.
Kelsey, do you sense that the urgency of this, I mean, for this early in the year, I mean, Clemson, Georgia had a sense of urgency. I think Oregon, Ohio State had a sense of urgency. And I know those were, you know, marquee games nationally. Just feels like the urgency of Carolina and Virginia tomorrow night really does impact both these teams.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, to have a game like this early in the environment that we're going to get as well, these are two teams that have really high expectations for themselves. And then from the outside, North Carolina came in this season with everybody having high expectations for them. I feel like Virginia is a team that maybe nationally doesn't get as much recognition or as much hype. And I think if they continue to win and continue to win games like this on the road, I mean, they've won the last two on the road at North Carolina. So they figured out how to do it there before. But that would continue to make them be part of a bigger picture conversation in all of college football. And then North Carolina still feels like, okay, we had these high expectations coming into the year. Yes, the Virginia Tech game was a grind and it didn't go their way, but this is another opportunity for them to come out on the stage and really set the tone and show people that, hey, everything that you said this off season is accurate, and we've got that and more. So the hype around this one is big for sure, Wes.
Kelsey, you know what I like about this weekend? I like that we've got a game like West Virginia and Virginia Tech where there's animosity amongst the players and the fans and all that stuff. And I like that you got the same thing going on with Virginia and North Carolina with some of the sound bites that we've heard on both sides this weekend. To me, that just, as a fan sitting at home on the couch, and I can't wait for high noon tomorrow, seriously, when these games get cranked up, because it starts at noon, it'll end about 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. But I always love when there is an edginess to a game that you just know that, hey, this is more than a W or an L. This one stings for a little bit if you lose it. And if you win it, you can't get too crazy about next week because, hey, there's another wave getting ready to hit you. But it just feels that way in Chapel Hill. It feels that way in Morgantown heading into the weekend.
And it just feels good to have that feeling again, right? Like last year, the big games were still big games and they mattered, but it just, like, you appreciate it so much more with the fans there and everybody's so much more engaged because we have this quote unquote more normal football season this year. And I think everybody appreciates it. And so do the players because they know what it was like last year and what they had to go through and all that they sacrificed. So I think that it comes out not just in the fans and the edginess, but also on the field, which, you know, just makes it that much more fun when you're watching it and when you're talking about it and when you're getting ready for it.
All right. So shootout tomorrow night, high scoring game.
You know, I would not be surprised at all. I'm talking with Jeremiah Gimmel, North Carolina's star linebacker, when we land at 11:30. So I'm sure he's going to tell me that they're all locked in and ready. But, I mean, these two quarterbacks can just do so many incredible things. And I'm excited for Brennan Armstrong to be on this stage, too. Like, we know how good Sam Howell is. We've seen it. But Brennan Armstrong is somebody that I think in this age of this year of the ACC quarterbacks, where we've got so much talent back at quarterback this year, Brennan is someone who I think is just going to continue to impress people and get more and more recognition for what he's doing. I mean, over 400 yards last week and 5 touchdowns, and you know, that's nothing new for him. He's been good for Virginia consistently since the end of last year. And, you know, one of the things from talking with him and the coaches and the players there is just, like, the confidence that Brennan has and then also the confidence that his teammates have in him. You ask anybody about Brennan Armstrong, and they just light up. They feel so good with him at quarterback. And I think that's gonna go a long way, and it might go a long way in the score column, too.
Hey, Kelsey, before you go, given what you've been through here the last 48 hours, if I said to you – February 19th, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
I don't even know. Is there something that should? February 19th. Well, I mean,
you've been
like
doing scheduling.
Time? Is that where we're at?
No. You've been doing the men's and women's basketball schedules nonstop for 48 hours. I figured you've got it to memory. If I just threw a date, you'd go, oh, yeah, that's a Florida State Duke pack. What else you want to know? You've been all over.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I was sitting there prepping for the men's show yesterday in the green room, and Trevor Maddich, one of our ESPN football guys, walked in, and he's like, who's going to win the game tonight? And I looked at him, and I said, I'm going to be completely honest. I'm studying men's basketball right now. Yesterday, I had a women's basketball show, and tomorrow I'm going to Chapel Hill. I don't have a clue who's playing in Thursday night football right now. I talked about it on Monday, but hey, today I'm studying basketball, and that's all I remember right now. I did watch the game, though. It was a fantastic ending.
I tell you this now. Let me tell you this. You're going to get in play tonight, so let's keep the hits coming, right, Pac? I mean, when you're at the top of the charts, you got to keep cutting loose albums.
Well, yeah. We'll have in play on the road tonight. That'll be exciting. We've got Marquise Williams is going to join me and EJ, so we're really excited to not just be in person, but to also get to do it on the road. It'll be our first in-play on the road. This is our first Friday hit on the road, too. So just all kind of first today, you guys.
There you go. All right, Kelsey, safe
first
travels.
Time Jordan
Thank you,
Cornette
as always.
Has helped me, first time Jordan Cornette has helped me carry my bag, too, just for the record, as I'm sitting here staring at him. Him and our great researcher, Vic.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Got a text during the break from legendary Chuck Walsh down there at Florida State. He knew February 19th was Florida State and Duke. He was screaming at it when I asked that question to Kelsey. Chuck Walsh knew down there at Florida State and what's going on.
There you go.
Yeah.
February 19th, Florida State, Duke. It is, let me just say this. The schedule came out last night, the last two nights, women on Wednesday, men last night. It's been interesting to watch. Remember I told you yesterday about those early games, the ones before January 1, those two league games that sit out there in December to help the ACC get to 20 in the rotations pack? And I noticed last night when we looked at the opening weekend, some of the games not only on ACC Network but being shown across the family of networks here. I mean, you got Louisville at NC State, Syracuse at Florida State, Clemson at Miami, Wake at Virginia Tech. How about North Carolina at Georgia Tech on Sunday afternoon, December 5th? I mean, they're right there in that little shell of games. Is pretty interesting just in terms of the games you're going to get that first weekend in December.
The best game on that list is Syracuse at Florida State. Why? Because number one, I think Syracuse is going to be really good. And number two, Florida State's got that ACC streak that I talked about yesterday. Nobody's been able to figure them out down there in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. So guess what? Streak's going to be put to the test right from the get-go. I made some notes last night, Wes, watching the show. And again, who knows? I think Syracuse will be good and we'll figure that thing out. But there were a couple things that were kind of weird with the scheduling. And again, with 20 conference games, I know it's always difficult. But North Carolina will host Syracuse February 28th. First and only time they play them. mm-hmm. But that February 28th. We're going to go the whole year and finally get around to seeing North Carolina and Syracuse. Miami opens up the season with four consecutive home ACC games. Mm-hmm. Now, Jim Larranaga, hey, congratulations, Merry Christmas. God bless you. Four straight home ACC games to start the schedule. NC State will have played Louisville twice by January the 12th. Twice. Mm-hmm. Clemson and Virginia will have played twice by January the 4th. Let that marinate a second. January 4th, mm-hmm. done. Hoos and Tigers. Duke, Coach K, I mentioned February 19th to Kelsey. Florida State comes to town, and then they'll have to wait 2 weeks until their next home game, which will be the last one, and that will be a nice piece of change to go see it. North Carolina at Duke, Coach K's last regular season game at Cameron Indoor. That will be so
nice. Let me. You mentioned the Tucker Center win streak in the ACC for Florida State. The last team to beat Florida State was Duke. And Cam Reddish on that jump shot. So there's the home slate for Florida State. You see Duke on the 17th at the Tucker Center. And Pac mentioned Syracuse. I'd throw Louisville in the mix. And Miami with the – I mean, we have no feel. That's the one thing about this year in the ACC. We can tell you who's on the teams. We can tell you what some of the experts think, what some of the coaches are going to answer for us. But until literally the games get played, Pac, I'm not sure – how much pocket knowledge we actually have of the ACC at this point.
Wes, what did I tell you 6 months ago? You know what? Let me know what your roster looks like in October.
That's it.
Then I will begin to worry about your team. And last night, watching the schedule show, the list of additions and subtractions from every team
crazy
was ridiculous. But that is the world that we live in. I mean, the reason I think Syracuse is going to be good because there's names on there that I've seen play. It's like, I know that guy can play. All those Boeheims, they can play. But the additions and subtractions on ACC men's basketball is ridiculous. So buy a program, grab your program. Buy a program, grab your popcorn. I don't have any idea. I really don't. I have no clue with what that's going to look like.
All right. You mentioned the game at Durham on March the 5th, which will be Mike Krzyzewski's final home game as the head coach of Duke, and they'll host Carolina. Now, when Coach K announced his retirement, we already jumped in the pool of speculation about how much those tickets would be and what they would go for and the number of people that would be trying to get in. We've had some jokes in the summer about, hey, if you know somebody that can get you in, right? Well, Brendan Marks has already pointed this out, our friend from The Athletic who covers the ACC, particularly in the state of North Carolina. Brennan said, for fans looking at that March 5 game between UNC and Duke, K's final home game at Cameron, one note on tickets. Four were auctioned off at the recent Dickie V charity event. It benefits the V Foundation out in California. Including stays at the Washington Duke Inn, four tickets went for $1 million. $1 million.
Well, I'd question, how much is a room at the Washington Duke Inn? Is it like $500,000? Good God. I mean, I know it's nice, but is it, I mean, really? Is it that nice? I mean, I know you ACC Network guys all stay there. You're staying in luxury. Ain't nobody staying at the Frontage Road Holiday Inn. Man, that's crazy. Of course, I always told you.
One million pack?
Well, the easiest thing to do is tell somebody else how to spend their money, right? I say that's another one of my pillars. So, hey, if somebody wants to come off the hip for a mil, for four, hey, knock yourself out. You got that kind of coin laying around, good for you. You'll have a great time. And that
but
Washington
$1 million?
Yeah, but that inn's supposed to be nice now. For a million, that better be really nice. Really nice. Double pillows, mints on the pillow. I want all that for $1 million. Goodness gracious. You know what? I'll be okay sitting here on the – I'll tell you what I'm going to do March 5th because I know the show won't be on the road. So I'll be sitting here at home with a cocktail watching that one, me and the dogs on the couch because I know we won't be on the road. That's a given. That's a guaranteed lock. We'll be sitting right here at home. That'll be fun.
1 million, pack. One million.
If you got like I told Kelsey, you got it, flaunt it. You got $1 million laying around, you want to go to the game and knock yourself out, you can do it. Goes
now,
to charity. Better yet.
Well, let me say this. That's a strong, strong donation to the V Foundation for four tickets and the Washington Duke Inn. But man, oh man.
What's the hey, by the way, what's the face value for a Duke basketball ticket? I have no idea.
Well, I think like a lot of schools pack, there's tier pricing now. So certain games cost a certain amount. It's not the same across the board.
Right,
and to be honest with you, I don't know.
All right, that's all I wanted to know. I mean, I'm just curious what a regular Duke basketball ticket would cost. I couldn't even guess.
I heard that the average ticket price probably 2 years ago when there were fans here, that 2019-20 season, the average ticket price was $265 for Duke basketball.
For a game or the whole season?
For a game.
$265 to go see a basketball
game? But Pac, remember now, we're talking about secondary market probably is that price quote. You're also talking about a range.
No, I'm talking about, hey, I have a ticket. I want to get rid of it for face value. What does that cost?
I don't know. We'd have to ask that.
That's what I'm asking.
Okay.
I'm not asking for the Washington Duke Inn to be included with my $265 ticket.
No, and the figure we're giving you is the average secondary market price
for a
Duke basketball home game.
I don't want that. I'll just ask, what does the face value of a ticket go for? That's all I'm asking.
Well, now, see, in athletic departments in the college game, you know this, some of this is going to be incumbent upon if you're a contributor to the school's athletic fund.
I'm not a contributor. I don't give Duke a dime. So what does a face value ticket go for? That's what I'm asking. And I'm not going to show ID at the gate either. I got a ticket. It says it right here. I'm in section 123, row A, seat 6. What does that ticket cost? That's all I'm asking.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.